Penix rolling out of the pocket to a strong hand. Delivers deep down the field. Caught, touchdown, Fry Fogle. Missed opportunities for Indiana, and they're still in this game. Penix, sideline, picked off Wade. See you later, Sean Wade, touchdown.
The High Motor Podcast, Andrew Doughty, Chase Kitty on the final High Motor Podcast before the first playoff rankings of the season, those coming on Tuesday night. And last night, we're talking here on Sunday morning, last night I was looking back and going through some rankings history stuff because I have a spreadsheet that I sometimes use for articles or podcast content, but I was just kind of browsing it, looking at, I uploaded all of the teams and where they've been ranked over history and teams that haven't been ranked, where the highest a team has been ranked over the first 6 years. And I was looking back through that, and this time last year, we would have been on the fourth rankings with only two to go. Instead, we're on the first rankings with four to go. So we're going to get into some playoff ranking stuff today, some playoff scenarios. We're going to get into your despair about the inevitable exclusion of your Liberty Flames in this week's rankings after Saturday's ugly loss. When Liberty loses, does a small part of you just kind of die?
I think it's the opposite. I'm not sure where you're coming from with this take. I get happy. It makes me happy.
You just stay up all night and have a meth fueled.
Yeah, it's like a hit of coke. I'm just like, woo! Liberty lost in an ugly ass 15-14 game to NC State.
What do you think the ratings were for that game? Just massive in Lynchburg and Raleigh, and that's all. That's it. Well, I guess you probably have a lot of Virginia people that enjoy seeing Liberty lose like you do.
There's a lot of hate-watching potential here in Virginia college football right now. The dumpster fire in Blacksburg, and then Liberty. I mean, the only thing that made that Liberty loss better is that they still covered, so I still made money. But they still lost? What it's like a middle between my bank account and my emotional happiness.
It's like betting both sides of a game and you hit both sides.
Exactly. That's, yeah.
So Liberty's not going to be ranked on Tuesday, but a lot of other G5 teams will be ranked. I haven't gone back to look through the maximum number of G5 teams that have been ranked in a single week, but I think the max ranked in the first rankings of any season is four, but I'm going to go back and check that after the show. I think it will be five. On Tuesday, the top of that list, I think, will be Cincinnati. I'm not totally convinced they're a better team than BYU. I think they are, but I think there's an argument for BYU. But I do think that Cincinnati will be at the top of that list because even with that Boise State win for BYU, their schedule is so weak that I think Cincinnati will be at the top of that list for the G5s. And I have a lot of questions for these playoff rankings that I hope to get on Tuesday night when they are revealed. Among them is more of a concern, which isn't, it's not directly tied to Cincinnati, but I think it does affect them. We've talked so many times in the past about this weird requirement that AP and coaching voters seem to have about when a team loses, you just drop them. Like, it doesn't matter who they lost to, what the score was. You lost? Okay, we need to move you down because that's just the unwritten rule of this voting. And along those lines, I'm kind of worried Indiana will be dropped down because they lost a game. A close game to the team. I think that Ohio State will be three. I think they could be two. I think Alabama will be one. I think Notre Dame will be two because of that win. I think Ohio State will be three. It wouldn't surprise me if Ohio State and Notre Dame were flipped. But anyways, I did a really quick look back and tried to find an example of this. In the limited time that I have to look back here, this isn't as high level of an example as a top 10 or even a playoff caliber team falling, but going back to last year when Georgia beat Auburn, if anybody remembers, it was that game that Georgia led 21-0, ugly game for the first half before Auburn came back in the second half. Final was 21-14, and Auburn didn't even look that great in the game, but they still played a one-score game against Georgia, who was number four before the game, and they were number four after the game. But Auburn, with that game, they dropped from 12 to 15. And again, even though Auburn didn't look great, they still played a one-score game against the number four team for the committee, and they were dropped from 12 to 15. I get that we can't just look at one result. We have to say, why did this team actually move? When we're at a point where, at that case, they were 7-3 and we're 10 games into a season, we need to look at the big picture. We need to look at the entire resume for Auburn and those three teams who did hop them, should they have hopped them. So I'm not saying it even shouldn't have happened, but there have been examples like this in the past where the committee has bought into this, well, you lost, so you need to be dropped. It's not as dramatically as AP voters typically do, but it still makes me worried in the case of Indiana that they will be dinged. I mean, let's pull up the AP rankings here. So let's say the committee did do rankings last week, and it was just the AP rankings as an example. Indiana was 9, and they were number 9 in the playoff rankings, if you're not following here, just for example's sake. And now this week, below them, they're not going to fall below Wisconsin after that loss, but they fall below like Oregon, who barely won, or Miami, who didn't play. I could see that happen. If Indiana was 9 in the playoff rankings last week and Oregon and Miami were just below them, I could see them falling below those teams because Oregon won and Miami did not lose even though they didn't play. I don't know if that would happen, but it just further illustrates my concern that what I'm concerned might happen is that Indiana might be dinged for a loss they shouldn't be dinged for. Where do you fall on this? I mean, you mentioned a lot at some point a loss just needs to be a loss, needs to count as a loss, and a win needs to count as a win no matter how it happened. But how far does that go for you in a case like this? And do you think that Indiana will be dinged for that loss, even though I think they look like at least the 9th best team in college football on Saturday?
So first, I think off the top, I want to say, I think your Auburn-Georgia comparison is actually a really good one because...
It was just the first one that I kind of found...
Yeah,
but it
ends up being, I think, the right comparison. Now, I know that Auburn had a lot of losses that year, and I think that probably plays into that drop. But they were down big, and then they come back after halftime and make it a one-score game. And that's kind of exactly what happened with this Ohio State-Indiana game, is Ohio State jumps out big, and you're thinking, okay, here we go. It's another Big Ten team that had a good record but is now playing Ohio State, and it's just different. And I don't know if it's because Ohio State took their foot off the gas, if it's because Indiana just, they're a feisty kind of team, and they are good. Like, they're legitimately a good team. So they come back and they make that a 7-point game so that when you're looking at the score and you're looking at the resume, and maybe we have a bunch of people out there in the media or whatever, maybe even in the room, although I doubt it, knowing how big that game was, I'm guessing people in the room watched it. It's easy to look at this game now and say, oh, okay, close game between Indiana and Ohio State. For me personally, I don't think that game changed my opinion of who either team was. Going into that game, I thought, I think Ohio State's good. I think if they win out, they're a lock for the playoff. I don't think anything could really derail that outside of them losing. But I don't think this Ohio State team is as good as other ones we've seen in the last couple of years. And I think playing a closer game with Indiana kind of confirms that for me. When I look at Indiana, I think that's a really good team. That's a top 12 team in college football. That really, really good. Sucks that they're in the East. Probably not going to be able to play for a conference championship. But man, that's a good team. And then I watched them yesterday and I think, yep, that's pretty much who they are. They're really good. They're well coached. They're scrappy. They're talented. They're all of those things. They're also not Ohio State. So I think both teams are ranked relatively appropriately. I share your concern that because they lose, that maybe there are forces in the room that go, well, we can't, they're a one loss team. They have to be ranked as a one loss team. And I don't know that that's necessarily appropriate because there's a lot of teams that would go to Columbus and lose. You know, it's less than 5 that probably wouldn't. So I think they should be ranked appropriately. I think they are in a, top 10 kind of team, top 12. And the committee should ignore the fact that they're a one-loss team because almost everybody would have that one loss if they had that schedule.
I have a really hard time seeing how... Again, let's just say the committee had them 9, which I don't think, because I think going into this week, the committee probably would have had them ahead of Cincinnati and BYU, both of whom were ahead of them in the AP poll, but I also think like Wisconsin might have been ahead of Indiana, even though Indiana was 9 and Wisconsin was 10. But generally, let's just stick with this AP poll example. It's in a tough spot because of where those G5 teams are. And I don't know how, going back to my first point, I don't know how you could look at Indiana less favorably this week than you did 2 days ago. I don't see that argument at all. Unless you thought Indiana was like a top four team, which I don't think anybody on this planet thought they were.
No.
I don't see how you can look at them less favorably now than you did before the game. In terms of the rankings, while I do have concern, I also don't know what to do with it because I had tweeted out before this weekend, before these games, I thought Indiana would be 8 in Tuesday's playoff rankings. I thought that they would play decent against Ohio State and they would be able to maintain kind of like that top 7, 8, 9-ish range. So I had Alabama 1, Notre Dame 2, Ohio State 3, Florida, Clemson at 4 and 5, A&M 6, Wisconsin 7, Indiana 8, Cincinnati 9, and Miami at 10. Now with Wisconsin's loss and now that Indiana has lost, and I had this concern before the game that if Indiana would have lost a close game, but now that it's actually happened, it seems more real for me. And the committee, I think, is kind of in a weird spot because, yes, we're going to learn some stuff from the rankings just based on where they rank the teams. They're not going to tell us shit afterward and explaining it, but you have two G5 teams in Cincinnati and BYU, both of whom I think are legitimately top 10 teams. I don't know if BYU will be in the top 10. I think Cincinnati will be, but I think in the case of, I mentioned Cincinnati in the open, how do you weigh a Cincinnati versus an Indiana now that Cincinnati still hasn't really played anybody? They have Tulsa here in a few weeks, which will probably be their toughest game of the year. I think Tulsa's probably their best team on the schedule versus an Indiana team that has beat a lot of bad teams, played really, really well against presumably the number two or number three team in the country. So what do you do with a Cincinnati and a BYU versus an Indiana? And ultimately, does that even matter? Because I think the G5 playoff path is completely closed. We think we said last week or 2 weeks ago that we weren't even going to bring it up again. I think that the argument is getting a little bit better, but I think the path is still completely closed on them. But does this even matter where Indiana is ranked? Or do you think that a concern like this could elevate up the chain and be talking about, I want to get to this example in a second, but be talking about if Florida were to lose a close SEC championship game, would they be dinged for that? So does this Indiana thing even matter in the big picture? Do you think that concern could be elevated to the actual playoff discussion?
I don't think it matters for the G5 because as we said, I think that's kind of closed off. I think where it could matter is the perception of the Big Ten. Because as we get closer to the playoff, we're going to start to talk about Ohio State. I think Ohio State has much realer scheduling and strength of schedule issues than we probably anticipated at the beginning of the Big Ten opening their schedule. And as we've said numerous times, Ohio State wins, they're in. It doesn't really matter. But I think it could be a little more uncomfortable than they wanted. And I think the seeding thing is going to be a real conversation because we thought going into this season, you know, you and I thought Indiana would be good, probably not this good, but they would be like a solid conference win. We thought Michigan was going to be there. We thought Penn State was going to be there. Now you start looking around, Penn State's 0-5. It's never happened before, ever. Michigan looks just kind of listless. Wisconsin just lost to Northwestern. So you're not going to have an undefeated Wisconsin to beef up your resume in the conference title game. This is a problem for Ohio State. And I'm not saying it's like a they're not going to make the playoff problem, but this is a problem that probably needs to be talked about now. So I think to sort of circle back to your question, if Indiana comes in ranked behind Cincinnati, which I think they should, or behind BYU, which I think you could make the argument that they should. Now you're talking about their best win is behind a pair of G5 teams. That's just an interesting spot for Ohio State to be in. I think it all ties back to how is Ohio State valued and commodified when you start trying to put them on a seed line.
I think it's an interesting spot and it's a surprising spot because like you said, we didn't expect them to be there. Even if Michigan and Penn State had taken a step back, I think I had both of them in my top 15 going into the season. I'm pretty sure I did. They both might have been in my top 12. You go from them being a top, even if they take a step back, being two top 25 wins to being two completely irrelevant wins. However, in terms of Ohio State's schedule, I don't think it matters because if they win out, they're getting the two or the three seed.
I'm not sure about that. I don't know.
Here, let me explain to you why I think it is. Okay. Because let's say Alabama wins out. We can agree with that, right?
Yes.
Or do you think they're going to lose to Florida?
Let's say, I don't think it's a lock that they beat Florida. No. I think Florida, the way their offense works, the way Alabama's defense looks, Florida can win that game. But obviously, you would want to make Alabama the favorite to win that game and be the number one seed. Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, so let's put Alabama as the number one seed. I think the winner of Notre Dame-Clemson gets either two or three, which means that Ohio State would get the other two or three unless they lose, because then the fourth team would be either like a two-loss Florida, a one-loss Notre Dame, or I don't see the Pac-12 getting anybody in. I think the G5 is done. We can talk about Northwestern if you really want to, but I think if Ohio State wins out, they're getting two or three, and then that fourth team is either going to be a one-loss Ohio State, because I still do have Clemson beating them in the ACC championship game, a one-loss Notre Dame. I would have the argument being one-loss Notre Dame versus a two-loss Florida team to get that final spot, and I think that they would both be well behind an undefeated Ohio State. They're not going to put an undefeated Ohio State behind a one-loss Notre Dame, behind a two-loss Florida if one of those teams were to get in. So I think if Ohio State wins out, they're getting two or three no matter what. So I don't see where a seeding question could come into play here for Ohio State. I just don't see a scenario where they could be four. Could it happen? Sure. Teams could lose. Alabama could lose. We could have that conversation. Maybe Ohio State loses. I have no idea. But I don't see where they could be four if they win out.
Yeah, I don't know that I agree with that. And I think it'd be interesting to see how the committee slates everything tonight, because mm-hmm. we'll have a lot more insight into this discussion down the road after that. Or not tonight, but you know what I meant. Right. I really think if Clemson and Notre Dame rematch in the ACC title game and Clemson wins, so they've each beaten each other and they both have a win over Miami, I don't think it's that hard to make the case that both of them have resumes better than Ohio State, even though Ohio State's undefeated. So I think that's an interesting committee discussion. I don't think it's at all unreasonable to say that you have Notre Dame and Clemson playing a rubber game in the two and three holes, and then Ohio State might be four. Now, I could see them saying, no, Ohio State's undefeated. You have to respect that. Put them in at two or three. I could see them saying, hey, we don't want to see a third game between Notre Dame and Clemson. So we're going to break this up, even if we don't think that Ohio State deserves the two or the three spot. I could see either of those things happening. But I could also see Ohio State being clearly the fourth best resume among those four teams. I don't think it's totally off the reservation to see a scenario where Florida wins the SEC championship game, Clemson wins the ACC championship game. Now you have four one-loss teams at the top that all have really strong resumes, and then undefeated Ohio State sitting there with kind of a weaker one, and they're sitting there sweating at the end.
Yeah, I think if Florida wins that game, and that's probably something we'll talk about closer to the SEC championship game, as it appears evident that that's the matchup. I think it's evident right now, but as we get closer to it, we'll probably talk about that specific scenario if Florida were to win that game. So I see where you're coming from there. I still don't agree with it, but I think maybe the question here is, where is Northwestern going to be ranked? Are they going to be ranked in the top 10? Because if the committee would have had Wisconsin in the top 10, which I think they would have, I think Wisconsin could have been as high as 6, as low as probably 9 or 10, worst case scenario. If they were to put Wisconsin there, and I get that Northwestern didn't look good, but why wouldn't they now put Northwestern in that 9, 10, 11 range? And Northwestern's, I think they're going to win out. I think they're going to win their next three games. Therefore, you would think it would be like a number two or a number three Ohio State versus a number five, six, seven, eight, nine Northwestern. And then after that game, Northwestern's not going to tumble that much unless they get blasted, in which case you're not going to penalize Ohio State for blasting the then number six, seven, eight team in the college football. I think Northwestern's only going to rise here. I just don't know where they're going to start. I don't know if Northwestern's going to start at 13 or 14, or if they're going to pull something out of their hat and Northwestern's going to be number 7 on Tuesday night. So is Northwestern maybe the piece that we're not talking about enough?
Maybe. I think Northwestern should be way up there. I think, I mean, not way up there. I mean, relatively speaking, you understand what I'm saying. But when you look at what they have now, they have a win at Iowa. They have a win at Purdue. They have a win over Wisconsin, who previously was a top 10 team. They're 5-0. As you said, they're probably going to win out. Like, this is a good team. They are now the player in the Big Ten.
Well, if Indiana was going to be probably 7, 8, 9 in the playoff rankings, Northwestern has a better resume than they. Granted, that was before the Ohio State game, so if we had playoff rankings that last week. But again, going to them and Wisconsin, if those two teams were going to be somewhere between 6 and 9, 6 and 10, why wouldn't Northwestern then be? Because they would have had better resumes than both of those teams. And I think that becomes the idea of perception. I watched almost that entire Wisconsin-Northwestern game, and even though that did not look like a top 8 or 9 Northwestern team, like you said so many times, you still have to give them credit for the win and shutting down an offense that had previously dominated, yes, Illinois and Michigan. I get that. But still, shutting down an offense and a quarterback that looked like going into that game was one of the 7 or 8 best quarterbacks in the country, you still have to give Northwestern credit for that. So maybe that's what we need to be looking at. I talked about Indiana coming in, and I have concern about dinging for a loss. I don't know if I necessarily have a concern about Northwestern getting enough credit for this win against Wisconsin, because I don't frankly know how much credit they should deserve for it, but maybe that's the piece we need to be looking at here, because I think you did open my eyes a little bit to that scenario you were talking about. I still think if Ohio State wins out, I am extremely confident they get a 2 or a 3. But with your comments now, I'm very curious where Northwestern lands. And if we were to get into a scenario, because I agree with you, I think Florida has a really good chance against Alabama. I'm just putting Alabama in there right now because I think they're the best team in the country. Therefore, I think they're going to win out and win that game. But if we get into a scenario where Florida beats Alabama, whether it's by 1, 2, or 10 points, I think where Northwestern is ranked this week, and because I think Northwestern is going to win out, we could get into some really, really interesting scenarios and put the committee in a position that I don't think that they've been in thus far through the first 6 years based on where Northwestern is ranked in the first playoff rankings. I have a hot take here. I wanted to talk about something else playoff, but I want to get into this. You mentioned overrated, underrated coming after this weekend, coming into this week. Is Northwestern kind of overrated? Is that possible for Northwestern to be overrated?
I don't think they were coming into this weekend.
No, but now.
But I can tell you almost assuredly, I don't know what the point spread on their next game is, but I will be betting against them.
It just feels like one of those things where we do it every year. We're like, well, how good is Pat Fitzgerald's team actually going to be? It's kind of like the Gary Patterson thing where they go 11-1, and then the next year they're 5-7, and they just kind of ebb and flow between that. And now it feels like we're back to, yeah, Pat Fitzgerald, Northwestern, he's got them playing again well, and they'd be kind of this trendy team, even though how ugly of a game was, I don't think we're going to put that much stock into it. But I think, oddly, Northwestern has kind of become overrated because we were so high in Wisconsin coming into this week. And Northwestern, I think they probably will be number 10 in the playoff rankings. Northwestern is not the 10th best team in college football. That is nuts. They are maybe 15 or 16. They are not the 10th best team in college football. Before we get to more of that overrated, underrated stuff, one more playoff question here, going back to this Florida, Notre Dame, Clemson, Ohio State situation. I think the biggest question for me right now is going back to my concern of dinging for losses and giving too much credit for a win. It'll be that one loss Notre Dame versus a 2-loss Florida for the 4th spot, because how I see I think the season will shake out, like I said, Alabama 1, Ohio State 2, Clemson in 3. Because I have Clemson winning the ACC championship game. I think there's only one question left here. Now that Wisconsin is done, and again, sorry Northwestern, I'm just not giving you a chance versus Ohio State. And with those results on Saturday, I think the Big 12 is officially out. The Pac-12 is just not getting in with that mediocrity. And this plays into my concern here. If Notre Dame loses, let's say, a 14-point game to Clemson in the ACC championship game, they have that earlier Clemson win, but that's it. I mean, there's nothing else to point to there for Notre Dame. And if Florida loses to Alabama in a close game, I worry because Florida does have that second loss, and we don't have that weird component of an independent Notre Dame without the conference championship game. That Florida will be, my concern is that Florida will be hurt with a loss, even though it's a close loss to the number one team, and their other loss is a close one to a potentially top 5-7 team in Texas A&M. I mean, I think you're right. Wins and losses need to matter at some point, but the entire body of work needs to matter more. And I really hope the committee doesn't say, well, you now have two losses, and Notre Dame has a win over a playoff team, which you do not have. We're going to ding you for that loss, and I don't think that's fair. So talking about my concern for Indiana and does that matter in the big picture, I think the similar concern applies here, and that absolutely matters in the big picture because I could very well see Clemson beating Notre Dame by 10 to 14 points and Florida losing to Alabama by 3 points.
I would want to go through Florida's wins game by game. I think you could, even without looking at it right in front of me, I think you could probably make the case that Florida has a better like line-by-line resume than Notre Dame just because there's a whole lot of, you know, Georgia Techs and Louisville's and Pitts in right. Notre Dame's schedule. And Florida gives you more chances to get good wins. They have the Georgia win. I think a close loss in the SEC championship game makes things interesting. Mm-hmm. I think they're in with a win. I think that seems obvious. If they win the SEC championship, they're in. So I think we're missing a couple data points still, but I think we know who the players are at this point, which is more than we could have said in some years going into the first committee ranking. So I think we know it's kind of down to Alabama, Notre Dame, Clemson, Ohio State, Florida, maybe A&M. Are we ruling out Miami? Are we saying Miami's definitely done?
Yeah, Miami falls into the G5, Big 12, Pac-12 for me.
Okay. So I think we know it's those 5 to 6 teams, which is pretty good.
And I hope we do get some answers on Tuesday. I don't know if we're going to get all of them, but where is Northwestern ranked? I'm curious just on a non-playoff level where Indiana is ranked, where are these G5 team ranked? Where is Notre Dame 2 and is Ohio State 3? Is Clemson 4, even though Clemson doesn't really have anything? Or do they bump A&M up? Do they bump Florida up? Can you even put Florida above A&M because A&M beat Florida? Do they care about the fumble? I think we're going to get a lot of answers here that, yes, it's an unconventional season, but we don't typically get in the first playoff rankings. And with only a few to go, I think we're going to get a lot of answers and a lot of clarity moving forward.
Wait, one more thing I want to ask you before we do the other thing. So I'm just looking. We've talked a little bit about the Northwestern versus the G5 teams and kind of where they align themselves. Which would you prefer? Which resume? I'm going to cut out kind of the BS games that we don't really care about. Northwestern has, as we said, they've got the win at Purdue. They've got the win at Iowa, and they just beat Wisconsin. They're 5-0. Cincinnati is 8-0. They beat Houston by 28. They just beat UCF by 3 at UCF. They won at SMU 42-13. SMU was ranked number 16 at the time. I don't think they're ranked anymore. They beat Memphis 49-10. Obviously, this is a lesser conference, but they've played more games. I'd say they have more like good wins. I don't know that either team has any great wins, unless you want to count the Wisconsin win. It didn't sound like you wanted to do that. So which resume would you prefer, given that? Which one do you think should be ranked higher?
This is where it's fascinating because this falls into the, are we putting the four best teams into the playoff? And I don't think any of these three teams make the playoff, BYU, Cincinnati, or I don't think you really mentioned BYU in this, but BYU, Cincinnati, and Northwestern. Or are we talking about the best resume teams? And for me, it's always been 90% best resume in the playoff. I think there does need to be a factor of which are simply the best teams. If you had me rank Cincinnati, BYU, and Northwestern, I would go Cincinnati, BYU, Northwestern. But I would flip those teams if you were talking about resume. I think Northwestern has the best resume, followed by Cincinnati, followed by BYU. But if you put those teams in like a little three-team neutral field tournament, I think Northwestern loses to both Cincinnati and BYU. But I think resume is extremely important here, and they do deserve credit. Even though Wisconsin looked horrible, they still won that game. And, I mean, isn't beating Iowa better than what Cincinnati or BYU has done? And I get that they went to Boise State and just laid an ass kicking on them, but I think going to Iowa and winning is arguably more impressive than going to Boise State and beating the shit out of them. So I think Northwestern has the best resume, but I think Cincinnati is the best team of those three.
I think that's fair.
It's a weird dynamic here of when we have to dish aside what you actually did on the field, which is we think who is the best team here, because I think Cincinnati is the best team there. Therefore, I'm really curious how is that ranked? And I think that Cincinnati will be ahead, and I think it'll be between, is BYU ahead of Northwestern? I don't think they will be, but I'm fine saying that they are, because that extra component of just who is the flat-out best team, I think it is BYU. All right, anything else on this before we hop into some overrated, underrated stuff?
Let's do it.
You mentioned this to me on Saturday night, that you had some general thoughts about who is overrated, who is underrated, who is getting enough credit across college football, not necessarily in the prism of the college football playoff. I mentioned, I think Northwestern is a little bit overrated now because they kind of seem like that trendy pick. You railed on Iowa State before the season. No, it was right after the Louisiana game. Like, well, guys, what are we doing? How did Iowa State get from this trendy, underrated pick to this super overrated team? I think that Northwestern is kind of teetering on that this week specifically. When you thought about this topic, what teams were you specifically thinking of?
So I have a list here, actually, that I can just kind of run through and we can offer some thoughts on.
Please.
That works for you?
Please.
Okay. Starting with Oklahoma State. Now, obviously, they just lost to Oklahoma in pretty non-competitive fashion, especially in the second half. Oklahoma kind of just...
Who was Oklahoma State head coach in 2 years? Right? Right?
Good question.
This has become a fun one for me because you brought this up in the preseason. You're like, I don't know. If the Big 12 shakes out like you think it might, and it did, maybe it's time to move on.
Yeah. And I even saw some people that were kind of like Big 12 talking heads on Twitter last night, kind of openly wondering the same exact thing I said in the preseason. Hey, is it time to move on from Gundy? Because, look, it's not like they're having a bad season. They have a good record. But if not now, then when? And it just feels a little like, eh, I kind of don't care. It's just, whatever.
Might be time to roll the dice and see what somebody else
yeah.
can do. I interrupted you, though.
Other people said, other people, I think, said the same thing that you said back then, which was, okay, but who's going to come in and be better than Gundy? And I think that's a fair point, but I think the overall point there is it's not about being better or worse than Gundy. It's just at a certain point, it's time to try something new. And right. maybe they've reached that point in Stillwater. I'm wondering where is the public consensus on Oklahoma State right now? Is it low because they just lost Bedlam and they're kind of being adjusted now? I would have said last week and also for most of the season, they're way overrated. You watch this team and you just know they're not. It doesn't match up with what the number is next to their name.
I don't know, because it's really hard to separate the off-the-field stuff with the public perception of Oklahoma State this year. With Chuba Hubbard, with the whole OANN shit, with Gundy's comments before about the transfer portal, and they're going to play no matter what this year because the state needs the money for the economy, all that shit. I think it's really hard to separate that, even though that's Oklahoma State didn't fire him, and I don't think they're going to fire him for that. If they do fire him, it will be because what you just said, hey, maybe it's time we just need to try something new. We know we're going to take a step back under whomever we hire, but we need to try to take a shot at improving this program to be an actual playoff team instead of just kind of middling in this 8 to 10 win range every single season. That being said, it's still really hard to separate that public perception of what Gundy said, his dust up with Hubbard, and what is actually happening on the field. Personally, yes, they are just stupidly overrated. This is not a good team. In a normal season, in a better conference, this is like a 6-win team at the most. So I don't know if I agree with the public, and I don't know how to gauge.
They were ranked 14th last week.
They're still going to be ranked in the top 25 this week. They're not going to fall out of the top 25 after one loss.
Yeah.
This is not a top 25 team. Almost everybody is playing. I think 127 teams are playing right now. Oklahoma State, I mean, they're ranked ahead of Coastal Carolina.
Yeah.
I am very confident that if Coastal Carolina goes to Stillwater, they are going to win handily. They are not a better team.
Money this year. Holy hell.
They're just not a better team than Coastal Carolina. So I think that Oklahoma State is stupidly overrated still.
I think, and I know I had that rant about Iowa State early in the season. I thought for most of the season, they have been ranked, or I want to stop saying ranked because this isn't about ranking. It's just about perception. I think they've been perceived relatively accurately. I think this is the week now we're going to start to see a little bit too much hype on them. And especially, I think they have Oklahoma next. And then I think they close in Ames with my Mountaineers. And I think now we're going to start to see them be a little overrated because of that, I mean, just smashing Kansas State. And I think people are thinking highly of Kansas State. I think they're behind where you and I were a couple weeks ago, where we said, look, without Skylar Thompson, this is not a top half team in the Big 12. They're just not there. So I wasn't, I would have, I had Kansas State. I went on 10-12 last week with our, you know, our friend Phillip Slavin, and we were talking with those guys. And I said, hey, I would take Kansas State plus the 11. But I'm not shocked that Iowa State just walloped them like they did.
Do you think, regarding Oklahoma State and Gundy, do you think that, let's take the off-the-field stuff out of this. Do you think that because of everything else that's going on this year in college football and off the field, not relating to what Gundy said or the Hubbard dust up, the cancellations, but then also what is happening to Jim Harbaugh? What is happening to Justin Fuente? What is already happened to Will Muschamp? What is happening? James Franklin? Do you think that all of that stuff is kind of overshadowing how bad Oklahoma State is this year? Or do you think that Harbaugh, Franklin, Fuente, talk about like Dino Babers if you want to, but I don't think that plays into this at all. All of that is kind of overshadowing the conversation that we should be having. I guess Scott Frost, we could throw him in there too, that we should be having about Gundy. Or is that irrelevant?
I don't think as caught up on the stuff from months back at this point than you are. I just don't think Stillwater is like the center of the college football universe. So once we have Michigan and Penn State and these SEC teams, and like once all those people are playing again and we've got the full sort of ecosystem of college football running, I just don't think people really care that much about Mike Gundy and Oklahoma State. I think you and I do because we pay a little bit more attention to the Big 12 than the average podcast or the average analyst or whatever. But I just don't think people are all that interested, frankly.
All right. What other teams do you have on that list?
USC. What do you think about USC so far?
I don't care.
Okay. Currently number 24 in the coaches poll, your North Carolina Tar Heels.
I'm tempted to say I don't care because after some people were suggesting that Sam Howell is now in the Heisman conversation.
Who said that?
I can pull it up. Like, it wasn't just some jabroni. It was, like, actual people saying that Sam Howell, after that game, I think it was against Wake Forest, that shootout. And I don't think people understand what Lamar Jackson had to do to win the Heisman for a team that wasn't good. If your team is not an 11-win team or a 12-win team, do you know what you have to do to win the Heisman Trophy? Even if you're, like, a 9-win team or a 10-2 team? I mean, look at Christian McCaffrey got totally hosed on a very good team. What you have to do to get the attention of Heisman voters?
14,000 passing yards, 55 touchdowns, 4,000 rushing yards, 18 rushing touchdowns. You have to successfully perform CPR on a choking baby. And you have to, like, anchor the Sunday night news and grill, like, sitting congressmen on, like, tax revenue bills. And probably have like some sort of garage band that you're advertising for on MySpace.
You good?
Yeah.
Obviously, North Carolina was overrated. You were aboard that train far before I was before the season, and they are still overrated. But because of how good, unexpectedly, Notre Dame is, and because of that win, I think that has largely overshadowed and kind of made North Carolina totally irrelevant because it seems like we thought North Carolina was going to occupy the spot that Miami is now in, where I think Miami is out, but Miami is still there. North Carolina is not even there. I thought North Carolina might occupy like that. Like going into these first playoff rankings, if you had me predict this 2 months ago or 3 months ago, I would have said North Carolina would have been like 12, 13, 14, which is a spot that I think Miami will probably occupy. Miami might be a little bit higher, 9, 10, 11. So I think North Carolina would have been in that spot if I thought they would have. We would have been talking about that going to the first playoff rankings here. But because of what Notre Dame has done and that win, I think North Carolina has become totally irrelevant and nobody's even paying attention to them anymore.
We're 1 week out from the Iron Bowl. How are you feeling about Auburn right now?
When are they going to make a coaching change? Like, is it a matter of enough donors haven't stepped forward, or they just want to see all these passes thrown behind the line of scrimmage on 3rd and 8 until somebody flips out? What are they waiting for? What was South Carolina waiting for? And they finally pulled the trigger. What is Auburn waiting for? I get that it's expensive. The buyout's over $20 million. But next year, when you have fans back in the stands, there needs to be some enthusiasm. Move on. This is not working.
I actually think Auburn has followed a pretty familiar script for them this year, which is that they were a little overrated early. They got upset by a team they should have beaten. But now that it's getting later into the season, they're looking a little better. I get that the strength of the last few opponents plays some degree into that. But Tennessee doesn't suck. They're not awful. And they've won their last three. They've covered their last three. And going into the Iron Bowl, I think that game next week will be closer than people expect. Not saying Auburn wins.
Well, what do you think people expect? 40 to 10?
The point spread's 21 points. So
do you think that, so let's set that as the expectation.
I know that's not a perfect representation of expectations, but.
Well, it kind of is. I mean, if that's what the odds makers think, the public will go on one side or the other. So let's say 38 to 17. That's the final score. That's where the public thinks this will land.
Yeah, I think it'll be closer than that.
I don't see that at all. I think Auburn could, they'll score 17 points in that game, I think. They'll probably score 21, 22, 23 points in that ballpark. Alabama will put up 50. This is not going to be a close game.
I think it could be a 7 to 10 point game.
I don't even want to argue against this because I don't care about Auburn football.
All right, we're putting it on the board to revisit next week.
I am more curious about UMass football at this point.
Oh, stop it. Come on. UMass. Yeah, talk about teams you forget even exist. They're so bad.
Right. That wasn't true at all, but
yeah.
I'm more curious about like Arizona, their next coaching change than Auburn. I just don't care about Auburn football. They're going to get blasted by A&M. They're going to get blasted by Alabama. They're going to lose at Mississippi State. Auburn is good. Well, they're 5-2. They're going to finish 5-5.
I do think they might get blasted by A&M. I'm kind of with you on that one.
5-5.
I think this is a good place to close this week. You know, we've danced around this a lot, and we talk a lot about coaching changes and stuff. We said early on, before the season started, we didn't think there would be that many coaching changes this year. We thought, with all that's going on with COVID and everything, and then on top of that, with just the state of play on a lot of the high-profile coaches, we thought it would be a relatively light year. Do you still think that?
No. I think that, and I don't know if this is an accurate representation of what we're going to see, but I think what we saw from South Carolina putting that kind of money into Muschamp's buyout, I mean, that was going to happen no matter what. But we talked about this last week. We both agreed with it. We both have concern about who you're going to bring in that's going to do that much better of a job, especially at that buyout that you paid, and especially whatever you're going to pay to the next coach. But I think that leads me to believe, I don't think that South Carolina is living in a vacuum. I think that other teams will do that. And I think that we're going to see that over the next few weeks, especially, I don't know if that was a fire me game for Michigan against Rutgers. Like if they would have lost that game, if Harbaugh would have been gone. But I think what South Carolina did, that kind of pushed me over the edge a little bit to say, we're going to see a lot more changes than we expected. But not, I mean, we usually get between 20 and 26, 27 changes a year. I thought we would have had like 3 total. We're at 3 already, and a lot of these teams still have 3, 4, 5, 6 games left. I think we could end up 7, 8, or 9, which would be triple what I thought we would have going into the season. Where are you at? Or I guess, what job do you think would... Are you on the same page with me about South Carolina? You think that job was revealing, that change was revealing, or is there another one out there where, like, when if this team makes a change, that's when I really think that this ball could get rolling?
I don't think I'm as high as you on the impact of the South Carolina firing, but I do definitely acknowledge that once you see somebody else do it, it becomes a lot easier for you to do it, whoever you are. I do wonder about what's going on at Virginia Tech, and that is purely because I live in Virginia and I just see more of it. Mm-hmm. I see, you know, I know the reporters that cover that team. I see some of the comments, some of the questions they ask, and some of the comments that Fuente is firing back at them. My guy Mark Barber asked a pretty, you know, straight up question yesterday about, hey, after the open week, is it time to maybe thinking about changing some of the play calling responsibilities? And the answer he got back was just inappropriate.
What did he say? What did Fuente say?
Well, I don't mean inappropriate, like capital I inappropriate, but he was just like, absolutely not. That's a ridiculous question. And I'm like, that's not a ridiculous question.
It's a pretty good question.
Pretty fair question. I'm starting to wonder about some of that going on over there. I don't think Harbaugh gets fired, but I do think the athletic department at Michigan says, hey, 2021, show us something or you know what's up. I think Franklin's fine, as bad as it's been in at Penn State. I'd be surprised if they made a move. I think it's easy with how bad it got at Penn State and what's going on with COVID and the fact that they've been pretty consistently good the last few years. I think it's easy to just write this year off as, hey, what are you going to do? Coronavirus. We'll be back in 2021. So I think I'm not ready to say it's going to be total bloodbath, but obviously things can change.
Going through this really quickly, I haven't done like a comprehensive hot seat thing, and maybe it's more of a, there aren't that many programs that are in position to make change. Like in the American, nobody's getting fired in the American. Unless it's for an off the field thing or a completely shocking change, nobody's getting fired in the American. If you go to the ACC, I don't think Syracuse moves on. I don't see any other change there. I don't think Pittsburgh is going to bail on Narduzzi yet. So you talk about Fuente maybe being the most likely one there. So through two conferences, you have one. Nobody's getting fired in the Big 12. In the Big 10, we can talk about Scott Frost if you really want to, but that's not going to happen. I agree with
they
you.
They haven't been half bad this year. I mean, I know they just lost to Illinois, but...
But they got blasted by Illinois.
They got blasted by Illinois. You're not wrong.
This is year three. But I don't think anybody in the Big 10 is going to get fired. So now we're four conferences in with one firing. I don't think like Dana Dimel is going to get fired at UTEP and Conference USA. Maybe like FIU makes a change. I don't think Middle Tennessee will make a change yet. I don't think like UMass is going to make a change. I don't think UConn is going to make a change. Independent. They're just in a normal, let's pretend this is a normal year. There aren't enough programs out there or enough coaches that I think are worthy of getting fired. And even though we get accustomed to seeing a sixth or a fifth of college football teams changing coaches.
Yeah.
Not even talking about COVID here or financial things at all. In a normal year, I don't see where all the jobs, I mean, go to the Mountain West. Who else is getting fired in the Mountain West? Nobody. Like Craig Bohl is not going to get fired. Troy Calhoun's not going to get fired. I just don't see where the jobs are coming from. Therefore, maybe we might end up with like six or seven. Like in the Pac-12, I don't think someone's going to get fired yet, but maybe. SEC, Derek Mason's really the only other guy to watch there because I don't think Auburn's going to move on. Sun Belt, maybe Monroe makes a change. Maybe South Alabama
Monroe
makes a change.
Monroe probably should make a change.
They should make it. They should not be this bad. Yeah. I mean, we talk about a lot, having access to talent doesn't necessarily mean that you should be getting that talent and out competing in LSU, for example, for that talent. But with how much talent Monroe has around them, they should be better than that. But anyways, maybe it's just a question of, there just aren't enough coaches that should legitimately be on the hot seat. And maybe that's why we don't see changes this year as opposed to COVID, as opposed to financial issues.
Yeah.
This will be interesting to watch.
I agree.
Anything else?
Nope.
We will be back on Thursday. That one will drop at 6 a.m. Central. We'll look ahead and do some betting odds for that weekend. Was it week 13 next week? I'm all messed up because
it's week 13 next week.
Yep. Week 13 next week. So that'll be on Tuesday at 6 a.m. Send any questions to the show at High Motor Pod, at Chase A. Kitty. If you have any specific games you want to talk about, any parlay stuff at all, And then we'll be back 1 week from now to look ahead to the next playoff rankings, what we learned from this weekend, and what we can learn moving forward. Maybe talk about some more of those scenarios for conference championship games as those start to come up. Thank you for listening to the High Motor Podcast.
I saw a friend today, it had been a while, and we forgot each other's names, but it didn't matter, 'cause deep inside the feeling still remained the same. We talked of knowing one before you've met, and how you feel more than you see, and other worlds that lie in spaces in